Welcome one, welcome all to Phoenix Cinema Podcast. This is a podcast where we discuss what's showing at the historic Phoenix Cinema in North London. I'm Chris Austin, and joining me is my co-host, Luke Parker. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello. How's it going?
Good, good, good. As I say that, coughing all over the place. FYI, I will be coughing throughout this call once again. Apologies, everybody. I am sick, I guess. But also joining us again, he's back again. Such a pleasure to have him, is manager of the Phoenix Cinema, Zaylin.
Zaylin, welcome, guys. Oh, pleasure as always. Very excited about this episode.
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, this is where Zaylin said, requested to be on this episode, because he was like, if you talk about small things like these, I want to be there. So absolutely, we welcome that. So I guess, yeah, without further ado, this week we are discussing the new Irish film by Belgian filmmaker Tim Melance, Small Things Like These. It has been a few weeks since I saw it, so I'm going to have to go off of memory here. Luke, you saw it how recently?
On last Friday, so I guess 3 or 4 days ago.
Perfect. And what about you, Zed? And I imagine it was a while, right?
So I've seen it a while ago, and I didn't know much about, you know, like the background. So I started doing some research, and I was really curious about the book that it's based on. And it's written by Claire Keegan, who also made a short story that was an amazing Irish film, came out a few years ago, The Quiet Girl.
And I haven't seen it. Zaylin, yeah, I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that is actually next up on my movie watch.
Absolutely. Just in general. That's perfect segue off this one, because, you find some similarities in the writing elements anyway, but yeah, it's I thought, and then I read the book, usually you read the book and then watch the film. So I read the book and then I decided to watch the film again, to have the whole experience of watching the film first time, now watching it after, you know, reading the book. And of course with multiple viewings you always pick up, you know, other things as well. So
Zaylin, I'm expecting a really in-depth analysis from you today.
We want answers.
The short one, so it's that's why also I thought, because, you know, the book is only 116 pages. So that's why the film running time is a bit, you know, normally dramas, they usually clock 2 hours. This one is much shorter because you only have so many, pages to work with in general.
There's only so many scenes of Cillian Murphy staring into the abyss you can really do in an hour and a half.
Yeah, but Christopher Nolan proved that wrong.
No, that is true.
With Oppenheimer, you can make a good three and a half hours of Cillian Murphy.
Just
doing
four
that.
Stops of Cillian.
Yeah, okay. So you did a deep dive, basically, Zaylin, into this. And so, okay, let's lead off with your initial impressions, because you chose this to be screened at the Phoenix. And so tell me how this landed on you overall.
So, yeah, we chose this film, and then I must say that the figures we had, admissions, were are pretty good. And I just wanted to say also that the first time I watched it in our cinema, and the second time I decided to go and watch it in a multiplex, because it's quite unique. It's obviously like an independent art house film. So I was curious that playing in a multiplex with a completely, obviously, different clientele, how this film's going to play out. And yeah, I really enjoyed that experience, because I think a lot of people were just figuring out what's going on in the film. But close to the middle point, towards the end, you know, usually people moving around, rustling popcorn, just silence, and everyone was just really engrossed and absorbing, you know, what's happening. And it's sometimes people get on, you know, like, you know, films that are a bit slow paced, it's one of those things that I always use the analogy of like catching a wind. you're out in the ocean and you know these waves coming, so you either catch the wave and then you ride with it, or you just can't get into it and it just, why is this happening and stuff. So I was in a part of the group that I really enjoyed this one, and I found it very engrossing. A lot of elements with it that it goes beyond, like just like there's other layers as well that you don't necessarily the films dives into, but the hint there are hints in it. And I found that even though it's takes place in the 80s, there's a lot of relevant subject and topics involved that you could project, not just about this particular story, because in a way it's a very simple story, but there's a lot of things that underline themes with it. But as it's this, this type of films, it's not like a popcorn blockbuster that you could just point out certain scenes. I'm really curious of how does it work out for you, this experience?
Yeah, well, when you saw it, sorry, excuse me, in the multiplex, was it busy?
It was a small screen and it was 80% full, which was
Wow.
nice to see. Yeah, it was nice to see. And as I said, I expect it to be like the crowd not getting into it as much. And I was really surprised. I assuming that majority of them, or like the big percentages, were probably Irish.
I also
And
feel like Cillian Murphy was a big pull for the film
exactly.
as well. Yeah.
Fresh off his Oscar win.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, it was a crowd that it felt that they some of that one of the elements that I think you could tell whether a film is having an effect on people, that when the credits are rolling, people were slow to get up and a lot of people stay till the very end. Now I usually stay till the very end in films, and I'm usually the only one. And if it's a late horror screening that finishes at 1 a.m., the staff is like, oh, this dude, why is he still in there?
Hurry up.
But yeah, but it's this one, it was like people chatting and stuff, and I think it was in like majority of women as well. So I think it's a different lens. Maybe they that some of them they knew a lot about it or read the book, so that was, yeah, it was an interesting experience.
Nice. Lovely. Well, okay, so then Luke,
Okay.
your thoughts?
See, I'm very much still on the fence with this one. I still don't really know what to think about it. I think it is a very beautiful film, and I'm glad you brought up the book, Zaylin, because I can totally see this working incredibly well as a short novel, where, with the medium of a novel, it's easy. Really easy to get deep into the thoughts of your main character, but the problem I had with the film is, like I mentioned before, it co sort of just does end up reducing to these endless shots of Gillian looking empty, right, into the camera or into the distance. And the film also, for me, so it's like interspersed with these flashbacks to his childhood. And I kind of struggled to see the relevance of those to what was actually going on. Like, I appreciate he's this man who's gone through this kind of trauma in his childhood, but I couldn't do like the mental gymnastics to try to figure out why this was massively relevant to what was going on now. So I guess the premise of the film is you have this small Irish town, and there's this Catholic convent where they take in women. I guess it's supposed to be like to rescue women in distress, but they end up basically he basically ends up uncovering that essentially abusing these women and their unborn children. And the whole premise of the film is kind of your moral responsibility, you're turning your blind eye to things. But I do give the film credit with how it dealt with that. I think it's really powerful, and all the scenes with Emily Watson in, who played like the
Sister.
senior, the senior nun.
Yeah.
She's incredible. She's so sharp and so cold. She's really, really chilling every scene she's in. So the way it actually deals with that, I like. It's kind of everything in between that makes the film feel as slow as it is. That's what's keeping me on the fence, I think. The film is really beautiful, and I feel like because it's quite slow and there's a lot of the time there's not really much going on, it helped for me to bring that amazing score right to the forefront. The music in this film I thought was so beautiful, and I really caught myself like actively listening to it, because you know a lot of the time it could become quite passive, but I really noticed that.
I don't even know who this composer is. Senja Jansson. I'd never even heard of them.
I've never heard of them either, but yeah, it was impressed.
May I ask if you got the flashback parts straight away? Because when the first time I watched it, I didn't even realize that, was a flashback. Like in the beginning, like obviously when it comes back to it, and there are some, you know, is going back to, so there are elements where you put one thing together.
Exactly. The first flashback, I was just a bit like, felt like a bit random. I don't really understand it. But then later on, you do appreciate what it is. But yeah, like I said, I just struggled to understand the importance of the flashbacks, because clearly they're important. They're in there for a reason. Mm-hmm. But I think I've missed out on that.
Yeah, I think it's harder when you it's easier when you read the book, because that for me the flashback point really come to full circle is not in a flashback when he's referring to so it's about, you know, his childhood, and he was basically one of those kids, you know, growing up without the father and losing you know, like the mother in early age. But There is an element, you know, when he has this discussion with sister, mother, and, you know, Emily Watson, she was terrific in it. And she was saying something about, oh, well, you must be disappointed. You only have, you know, 5 girls and you don't have any boys. And then he's really thinking about it. It's like, well, there's nothing wrong came out of, you know, like my mother's name. And that was like, oh, so it's all those things. And, you know, even when the kids were asking about like Christmas presents, it's like one of those things that like trauma recognizes trauma in a way. And, you know, it's one of those things that childhood trauma, it doesn't matter how old are you, it stays with you. And I think that's the point that they're trying to make. But I get like that element is the one I would say with the films that the flashbacks are taking you a bit out of that flow, mm-hmm. but luckily they're not really long sequences to have like a you know, long lasting impression that way.
And I did. Sorry, Chris, you go.
No. I was just going to say to that, I'm sure, Zaylin, you have far more knowledge about what those flashbacks were having read the book, right?
Okay. Yeah. The flashbacks, because, you know, in the book, it's such a beautifully, like, it's such an easy read, and it's a beautiful a piece of art, but it uses it, the flashbacks, in a way that he's telling you that, you know, what he's thinking, what's in his mind, and in a way, you know, like, it's not like, okay, you know, going back 20 years, different scene. He's using the flashbacks within, you know, certain sequences. It's not, oh, now he's thinking about this because of it, and but I think that's the element that they actually maybe cut a little bit down, because on the book there are a bit more about those things. But in general, I think it's a very one of those adaptations that it's really, really close to the original. So I think they have not really added much or cut a lot of things out. So in that way, I guess if you read the book and you had an idea of what the film would look like, you would be very satisfied in the end.
Interesting.
I will say as well that even though, like I said, I'm very much on the fence with the film, I still found the ending incredibly impactful. You know, it's a very abrupt ending.
I
think it gives a very good kind of like bookmark the film, because it starts off with obviously the church burying, you know, and it ends up with the church, but it has kind of like a different ringing or meaning, you know. In the beginning, it's like it's just giving you the atmosphere and setting up for Christmas, humble Irish town, you know, the church is, but in the end, it's kind of like, it's, you know, we will be watching you, you know, it's a reminder, you know, we are there, you know, like you can't just, you know, like we have to deal with us in a way. Like it's, I don't know, even the same sound, it just have a, to me, it had like very, very like a specific ring to it. And maybe that was the director's idea as well, to have this framed in a way that you start and it just take into the journey, and you think about the same ideas, maybe with a different lens of thinking.
Yes. Yeah, did you have another point to make on that ending, Luke?
No, I think it's just because I found that ending so powerful, that's what's making me doubt my feelings about this film.
Right.
Because even though I can't say that I enjoyed it massively, it left me thinking a lot, you know, it really lingered with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate when a film does that.
I think it has a lot of elements that as well, I think what I found, especially when you watch it the second time around, you know, you already know the story, you picking, you looking at things in different angle. And I just found, you know, some of the like sound design incredible, like not just the score, but the way, you know, using distant voices and like the babies crying in the background, the cartoon and stuff. And it felt to me that some of the selections were specifically like, then you cut to Cillian Murphy and then there's no sound, just him breathing, and you could feel the struggle in the situations when how do I deal with it? And you know, you always thought about in movies, you always see that the movie characters, they know what to do when they face a situation. Okay, I don't know what to do. I know what I'm gonna grab this and, you know, like just save this life. And you see this moment when it's like you literally feel for him because he's so awkward. He just doesn't know, what do I do here? And then his expressions, in a way, like,
and those you big gazing, mournful, soulful eyes of his, which is just so incredible on camera, where you see him thinking, you know, in all these wonderful close-ups. I mean, I guess Cillian Murphy's the man for close-ups in this, in our modern era, but he's got such an incredible face for it. Yeah, I totally agree. I'm like, especially with you, Zaylin, and I'm so glad you're speaking about, you've mentioned already, you've spoken about silence, you've spoken about sound design. One thing that really struck me about this movie is that it appreciates silence. And it appreciates silence in a way that far too many movies these days are scared to, you know, maybe for fear of pushing away an audience or boring an audience or losing focus. I don't know, but it's so incredibly powerful in how it sits in silence. I really appreciated that. and it's so interesting what you're saying as well, Luke, with the flashbacks not connecting with you and maybe taking you out and you're not quite sure. So I personally, I really enjoyed this film. I thought it was beautiful. Like you were saying, Luke, but also what you're saying to it as well, Zaylin, I think it's such a good film. And I can't help but think about the last film we spoke about, Luke, which was The Outrun.
I felt similarities too.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's like everything that you loved about that film. Remember, I was more on the fence with The Outrun. Mm-hmm. Now we're kind of switching places here. And the funny thing is, I wonder if it's because this movie suggests a whole lot more than it tells. It suggests. I mean, you walk out of this movie going, there are pieces of the puzzle, literally, there's a puzzle that in the flashbacks he's assembling in the movie, there's pieces of the puzzle that have not been put into place. And yeah. you're left to wonder, what is the meaning of this? And so it doesn't give you everything. And I love that. Maybe that's the lost fan in me.
Oh, it's a very good point. But there are elements in it that, you know, which I appreciate in European cinema in a way, that they don't have to tell you what's on the tin. And I think it goes beyond just the church and stuff. It's all about, you know, the elements that we face in our society sometimes, that, you know, all these mass things going on, and then just what can you, can, you know, people even say, oh, what's the point of me going voting? Or just, you know, is that one person's opinion, you know, going against the, what, you know, you're supposed to do, what they say, you know, like that line that, you know, sometimes you have to ignore things, and it's the easy thing to do, right? But there is that thing, little doubt, you know, sticking with you that, oh, yeah, is this the right thing to do? And I think that goes beyond just about this specific topic, and, you know, shows, you know, pain, vulnerability, you know, like beauty, you know, a lot of things that are affecting us. And it's done in a way that, as you say, like suggesting a lot of things, rather than just, you could say, actually, it went completely different when I read about this film, and I thought, oh, this is going to be like a juicy little, you know, big Irish epic against, you know, church versus, you know, small town. But it actually just didn't really get into the depth of it, or what was actually happening, just basically letting you decide, like, okay, if you were impacted by this film, you do your own research. What was this, you know, Magdalena?
Yeah.
What happened? Oh, it was really, really going on that long. Do they read the church and a state would work in together, you know, no aspects of it? And I guess maybe some people would be thinking, like, okay, well, they would prefer that type of storytelling. But in a small scale of things, I think there's a beauty of the way they handle this one.
I agree. They ask you to lean into it. They ask you to bring yourself to it. Do you want to know more? Well, go and find out a little more. Like, I had no idea. So this actually happened. This was a true story, right? What was happening with the church and taking in these girls who not just were vulnerable, but were deemed to be sinful, right? Maybe getting pregnant out of wedlock or what have you. And so, yeah, it seems so, so interesting. Almost, if you told me that this wasn't, is it a fictional piece of, it's a fictional piece of work around this true story,
yeah.
right?
So, but yeah, it is, yeah.
I would have sworn that this would have been based on memoir, just like The Outrun, from his point of view, you know what I mean? Because it dives so fully into his point of view. I think it's, yeah, I just think it's so, so intriguing, so fascinating, because you don't get movies like this these days. You really don't. And I think, listen, the entire cast is lovely. And, you know, we've spoken about Cillian Murphy coming off of his Oscar win. Another lovely performance from him. And a lovely choice, you know, to do this film after something like Oppenheimer. I mean, maybe he did it concurrently with, I don't know, but... But yeah, really, really like spot on, like a home run for him. And what you were saying as well, Luke, about, is it, what's her name, who plays the lead nun?
Emily Watson.
Emily Watson, yeah.
When I saw her name come up in the credits, I thought for the life of me it was Emma Watson. Is Emma Watson the one from Harry Potter?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh shit, I had no idea she was in this film. So I am now waiting this entire film for Emma Watson to show up, and I'm fully expecting she's going to be one of the girls in the convent or whatever. And I was like, the movie ended and I watched the film with my girlfriend. I turned to her, I was like, where the fuck was Emma Watson? Just like, she was never in the box. I was like, oh, okay. But yeah,
he's really elevating that. Like, that's the element that, you know, when you read the book, that character is not really coming across in the book that way. So that's one of those things when, you know, those two actors, they really just made this, put this film in a different level, because she really commands that. Like, when she's in there, just with her her eyes and strict to the point, and you feel like that if I were in Killian's shoes, I would have done the same. I wouldn't dare to speak up or just stay silent, as you say. Sometimes just say nothing. But even just going back to his performance, what was amazing when I was reading the book as well, that there's not much dialogue in it. There's a lot of things about what he's thinking, and it's just like, how are you gonna make a film when it's everything is all about interiority, and it's well, the character never puts any feelings into words. What are you gonna do? Well, you hire Cillian Murphy, who can handle just and it's just some of the scenes. It's like, I mean, there's this scene that I was actually was nearly chuckling to myself when I was watching it, because he puts on, when there are these moments when you're thinking and you're daydreaming and stuff, and your body just automatically does stuff, you're just doing things. And there's this scene when it literally takes a minute to put on a coat. Like, he just the slowest thing is just and but he just tells you, like, he's clearly he's not there, he's just thinking, but he's going through the motions, but he just does it very, like, ridiculously slowly, because his mind is somewhere else.
Yeah, and it also speaks to his very manual labor job that he has to do. And so when he's putting on his jacket and taking it off, you really get the sense that his back, from the years of doing this job, he's feeling it. And so it's not such an easy thing to do anymore. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because that's just, as an actor, that's a lovely bit of physical character work, of just manifesting the years of labor that this character has to work. And he comes home covered in dirt and grit. He has to scrub his hands in the sink. So putting on a, I love that. I think that's just a lovely element. Yeah, a lovely element.
And then, I've noticed, there's a lot of, I'm sure it was a director's choice specifically to there's a lot of shots when, we see him behind. It's kind of like the camera's turned, like the face turned from the camera in a way, and it kind of just creates this detached atmosphere in a way, association that's kind of like, he's a remote, unknowable character, just, kind of daydreaming through. And then you cut to his face, when you could actually, as you mentioned, you could see the labor and the pain and the hardship and the worry in his face, which is a nice contrast to the point when he just sits in a chair and looks out through the window, just, but he notices things, what's going around, life, and just things that just maybe it doesn't relate to his life, but it just, as you mentioned, there's a puzzle that you're adding things together that, okay, well, there are things maybe should be in a bit different way,
Absolutely. And it's interesting because Milance, the director, so he's worked with Murphy before. He directed 6 episodes of Peaky Blinders. So there's a previous working relationship there between them. And you almost feel that. You almost feel that simpatico back and forth, that sort of that connecting line between them. It feels so symbiotic and it feels so close, and also he has this lovely way of just sweeping the room or the location with his camera, and that's his establishing shot. That became his thing. He
Just
sweeps the room.
360 pans,
Yeah,
that
and so
just kind of, yeah.
you get to take in the entire, you just sit forward and you're like, oh, who's in that photograph? Oh, so you've got this thrown over the back of the chair. The attention to specific period detail and time and place, it's just lovely. I mean, it drops you right into specific 1985 New Ross Island. It feels so lived in and specific. Oh, it's
Yeah,
wonderful.
I'm pretty sure that there is not going to be a 30-minute deleted scenes on the Blu-ray with this one. I think every shot was purposely executed, and probably that's it, and it maybe that because of the material has doesn't have, like, I appreciate the fact that probably, like, they were struggling in a way that they made the script, and it's like, okay, well, that's only 70, 75 minutes. We need to add something, but sometimes just don't need to add for the sake of it. And that's why probably they didn't want to alter the storyline and just don't need to, for the sake of it, push, you know, the story over to 2 hours in a way. If you can tell it within, you know, like 90 minutes, having the same impact.
Yes. And, you know, I had to pee again, right? And this is just an ongoing issue for me in movies.
That happens to people.
You know, and I'm like, and so you have to gauge, you know, you have to use your gut instinct, because I've never seen this before. When is the good time to go? And I felt like exactly what you're saying. Everything is so precious, every silence, every look, every moment. Anyway, we're getting towards the end of the film. I didn't know it's the end of the film. I need to go. So he's gone back to that. There's just such a lovely moment. Anyway, I don't want to spoil it, but when he, you know, he gets this girl and he's walking her back through the streets, and I thought, okay, there's another solid half an hour, maybe 45 minutes of film left here. So I used that moment to go to the bathroom.
Get back and the credits were rolling.
Well, thankfully not. But I got back, sat down, watched the final two shots, and I was like, are you kidding me? but yes, it's so lean and efficient and compact. It gets in, it tells its story, and it gets out. And what you were saying as well, Luke, about the ending, a wonderful, wonderful ending. Again, talking about appreciating silence, you go from this cacophony of noise in an exterior room to silence, and then cut to black. And I was just, it's such an incredible, so I watched it with my girlfriend and we left the cinema and she burst into tears. And I said, what is it? What's wrong? And she said, I don't know. She was so over, she couldn't articulate what about that movie struck her so emotionally. She was just overcome. And I think that that's the greatest compliment you can give this movie. If you give yourself to it, it does affect you, and in a ways that you don't even quite understand why. Full credit.
I think it's because there are elements in it that I think you, well, for my takeaway anyway, is that it's, you know, not, and that's why I appreciated it. It wasn't, well, we need to make a movie versus the church. It's more about that morality, and then that one person being a really solid, nice human being that has a merit. You know, you don't have to, just because you're in minority in the view, but if you really believe that's the right thing to do, then that's, it's very important. And what the other element it is, he's just such an honest guy in it, like that, you know, you notice these things in when you watch it, you know, a second time around, that he's brutally honest. Like, even to the point when, you know, very, very simple question that they were asking, you know, like the wife was asking, oh, did you say thank you for her? And it's such an easy white lie, you know, she wasn't there. I could just say, yeah, of course I said thank you for, you know, I get like a big chunk of, you know, money. But he doesn't answer. He doesn't lie to her. She just like, all right, love, and she just walks away. So it's like, he's so honest, he's not gonna lie about even the tiniest things, and he just rather they just say nothing, you know. And I appreciated a lot of those elements when they try to put the point home, you know, like they in a way that it is sometimes even just as, you know, the title suggests, tiny little things, a small gesture can go a long way. And I think that could affect people in a way that, even when you go, or, you know, how you live your life in a way, you know, especially you live in London, when sometimes there's not much communication. And then when you see, let's say, someone smiling at you like a stranger or something, like even tiny things, you know, small gestures that you don't know that have affect that person in a way, right, you know, in a positive way. So I appreciate that. I mean, he's the only one who's not clapping when the, you know, church lights are going on. It's like, oh, okay, everyone was clapping. And he's like daydreaming. It's kind of like he's processing, you know, what's going on and how is everyone around and surrounding him acts in a certain way. So, yeah, it's one of those that I'm not surprised that stays with you, especially, you know, I know it's three books talking about it, but I can sense that maybe from a female point of view, especially maybe if you know people who had to go through with certain things a similar way, or for an Irish person, that's obviously a huge, huge deal.
And the thing is, you know, yes, he's so honest, and it's a very moralistic film, right? What do I do? I've witnessed something that I'm sure is wrong, that I believe deep down is wrong. Should I intervene or not? And he makes a choice at the end of the movie. The choice that he makes, as moralistic and as victorious as that moment seems, you know that past the point where it cuts to black, there is
repercussions.
Yes, massive trouble for this, not just for him, but now his entire family, his daughters. And I think that even more makes the cut to black even more of a fuck. I'm glad. I don't want to see what's next. I don't. It's nice to end on what you're speaking to, Zaylin, this human moment. You have to make a choice sometimes. But the cut to silence also resembles this. What have you done? And what's in store for us now?
I think what really emphasized that as well is those final scenes when they're walking through the town. The way it's shot, you have like the town people.
Oh, that I missed.
They already.
Oh, did you miss that?
Yes, they missed that part. But no, it's a great point, because that you can already sense that they're looking.
They're watching. Yeah.
What are you doing, mate? Like, what are
you? Oh, really?
Yeah, they already, like, he's looking around. He knows. You know the moment when it's like the gazes are like lasers pointing at you. You can feel the, you know, the looks of people at you. Because that is clearly what's going on, you know, that everyone can, you know, like, read the situation in a way. So that is a great point.
Well, so Luke, you know, the Outrun made you want to go and seek out that memoir that the movie's based on. What about this film, this book? You interested?
Yeah, I definitely am interested, because I was doing a bit of research, and I was surprised at how short the novel is, as Zaylin mentioned. I mean, if they wanted to really flesh this out, this could be a pretty chunky novel, but I'm really curious as to how, like, the storytelling is different to the film, and like maybe get a better idea of those, like, emotional connections Killian's character was, like, making when he was, like, with those flashbacks, for example. I think it would really help flesh out the story out for me.
For sure. And you know, I know as much about the flashbacks as you do, Luke. I'm also still like, what's the exact relevance of this? And what's the journey from this to where he is now? I want to know that. But I love that. I love the fact that, yeah, it didn't quite fill that in. So I would love to go to the book as well. I'm also curious as to how Matt Damon, of all people, ended up as a producer on this film. Yeah, I didn't realize that actually he's a fairly heavy producer in general, and he has a lot of productions to his name, and like this, not necessarily films starring him. So very curious about that journey from book
I don't
to...
I don't have a theory on it. Maybe that's what happened. The fact that when lockdown happened, he was shooting a film, The Last Duel, the Ridley Scott film, in Ireland. And he kind of stuck in there. Like, he's stuck in Ireland for maybe a year or something. Because we wanted to commit to this film. And I think maybe that's the fact that he was talking about how the reception he was getting and the warmth of the people and just the friendliness. And just, so he was giving flowers to the country. So maybe that's the fact that he had, like, associations. And because I think this is, like, they picked up, I think, Ben Affleck and Matt Damon's company distributing this in the States. So they really felt probably that's the story they wanted to put it in their own catalog in a way.
Really interesting. Yeah. Oh, shall we do this? This might be cool. You've already done it, Zaylin, but what if at some point me and Luke, we go and we read the book and then we come back on here and just discuss the book?
Sounds good.
That might
be a two-hour read. It's really a two-hour read. Like, it's 116 pages. So
listen, I am down for that. I am down for that. Cool. Let's move on to pairings. I mean, because the thing is, I could just carry on talking because I want to just take this whole thing apart. Let's do pairings. Zaylin, let's start with you. What would you pair this movie with, sir?
So the pairing is for this one is I picked a documentary called Sugarcane.
Sugarcane.
So Sugarcane is it's a stunning tribute to like a resilience of the native people in North America, and it's a double feature from Julian Gray, I think Brave Noise Cat, and Emily Cassie. So it's an epic cinematic portrait of a community during like an international reckoning. So basically, just summarize it quickly, that in 2021, the evidence of unmarked graves were discovered in the grounds of the Indian residence school run by the Catholic Church in Canada. And after years of silence, the forced separation and lot of abuse claims came to the forefront, and the film is an investigation, live investigation of that story, that you try to going back to what happened, you know, for decades and decades, and how is it impacting the community to this day. And it's not just about the fight for the church, which is a very live thing. I mean, there are actually a bill going into the Congress in this States that might actually the film might have an impact on it, but it's all about the beauty of a community breaking style, like the cycles of the intergenerational trauma, and finding the strength to persevere. And I was fortunate enough to go to Q&A with the director, which was screened a couple of months ago. And if you get a chance to see it, yeah, I recommend. This is an epic documentary, which why I use the word epic, because usually documentaries are not known for the strength, the visual strength, but here, the way they're using the visual language that really, really elevates the story. And it's a National Geographic-produced movie, but it's an R-rated film. So that's already like an 18-rated film. So that's... there are some heavy topics in it, and the similarities in terms of a community and what one person can do to fight for justice in a way.
Wow, Zaylin, that sounds wild. I've never heard... Luke, have you heard of this?
I've never heard of that.
Hopefully you're going to hear about it, and it's going to get some nominations during the awards season. But it's a lovely document if you can catch it some point.
Amazing. Thank you for that recommendation, Zaylin. I will get on that for sure. Thank you. Great. Luke, okay. What have you got?
Oh, man, I found this really, really hard.
Me too, as always.
But, like, as I think Zaylin mentioned it a while ago, but this film did remind me quite a bit of, like, the style of European cinema. Like, this quite... kind of slow contemplative nature, like quite deep character character studies, especially like kind of European films of like the 80s and 90s. And I picked to pair with this a film called Three Colors Red, which is Krzysztof Kieślowski, who's, I think that I'm pronouncing that right, is one of my favorite directors. One of his other films is called The Double Life of Veronique, and it's an incredible film. But this one, Three Colors Red, it's part of a trilogy. And quite a big element of the film is about this woman who befriends this man, and she finds out that he's basically listening in on his neighbors. And there's like this element of moral ambiguity. And I mean, it goes in a incredibly different direction to this film. But like I said, in terms of like the quite deep and contemplative nature of small things like these, I think it did remind me of Red quite a bit.
I love that. Again, have you heard of that, Zaylin?
Yeah, it's one of those. It's a very, very, very interesting choice, and especially that you mentioned Red, because most people with the trilogy, they talk about Blue, and even Bard gets a mention. Like we've done the trilogy, I think a few years ago, and Blue always got like the highest like admissions, and then Red was always the lowest. But it is very underrated of the trilogy. I'm wondering if it's your favorite of the three.
My least favorite is White, but Blue and Red, I'd say I like on the same level. I think they're both amazing. Yeah.
I love this. So two films that I've never heard of. Again, my favorite parts of any episode, because I get to add it to my watch list. So thank you. I'll add that. That's amazing. I struggled too, and I am a basic bitch. So I'm going to go with well-known films that everyone knows and has seen a million times. However, I couldn't come up with a pairing for this. I actually couldn't. I struggled. And immediately after the film, Carrie Ann, my girlfriend, she came up with a pairing. And so I went, you're brilliant, and I'm going to go with that. However, I've just come up with one as you were talking, Luke. So I'll tell you what Carrie Ann's pairing was, and that was Belfast.
Ah, okay.
The Kenneth Branagh movie. Won, you know, a bunch of Oscars, and deservedly so. Brilliant film, and I get why she chose it. It really, it's another great film about just telling about the community in this small Irish town really, really well. And that, just as that pairing alone, that connection alone, I completely vibe with that. What would you want to say?
I actually did think that at first.
Okay.
But to me, they're very different films. So like, I understand the pairing, but like, you have one which, small things like these, it's incredibly quiet and within this like, working class, almost like a serene town, this working class Irish town. And then you go to Belfast, which is in Northern Ireland and right in the midst of the Troubles. And even, yeah, I understand that pairing, but yeah, like I said, I made that choice first, but then I was kind of like questioning it.
Sure. Yeah. It's tenuous, it's thin, but to which I say, why not?
I mean, my pairing was just as tenuous. So,
what was your actual pairing then? We just came up with this.
I just thought of Spotlight. The 2015 movie again. won a bunch of Oscars. The reason I'm choosing it because it is about this uncovering of this massive scandal involving children. Very specifically more child molestation and the cover-up within the local Catholic church, I think in Boston, because I think it's the Boston Globe reporters who uncovered it. And that was, it's just a really well, again, completely different film in terms of the vibe you get from it. That movie is in the vein of All the President's Men. It's investigative journalism, you know, dot to dot to dot. But it's a great film by Tom McCarthy. It's a great cast, you know, Mark Ruffalo, Michael Keaton, Rachel McAdams, Liev Schreiber, John Slattery, Stanley Tucci. I mean, it's standout
it's a stacked
cast.
Yeah. Wow.
Completely stacked. Have you
and
guys
you got
seen
the
it?
Link to Matt Damon and Ben Affleck via Boston as well? You know,
hey!
Yeah,
there you go. And I knew I could rely ultimately on Zaylin to tie everything together. Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing.
I've seen Spotlight and I agree. It's an incredible film.
Mm-hmm.
Such a strong script. Like, it's such a well written film as well. Like, it's, love stories like that.
Shocking. Yeah, completely shocking. Well, guys, thank you. This has been great. This is a long episode, and I'm glad it's a long episode because it deserves to be. Maybe it deserves to be even longer. Who knows? Zaylin, thank
Not
you
longer
so much.
Than the film.
Longer than the film itself. Yes. Thank you so much for coming back, sir. And I can't
guys.
Wait to can't wait to see you on the next one and keep doing what you do and just programming the best fucking movies to watch at Phoenix Cinema, honestly.
Some good ones coming in late December and January. So yeah, looking forward to.
Awesome. I cannot wait. And Luke, thank you again, sir. And I will see you on the next one as well.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
I will say, lastly, to exactly what Zaylin just said, Phoenix Cinema is now closed until 17th of December while improvements and refurbishments take place, including the addition of a second screen, which is historic and extremely exciting. So good times ahead for the venue. Special thanks to Phoenix Cinema and Zaylin of Phoenix Cinema. Our music is by Stefan Krieger and our episodes are edited by Noah Anderson. If you like this podcast, please share, like, rate, and subscribe. It helps us massively on your way to watching a movie at the Phoenix Cinema. I'll see you there in mid-December. Bye-bye.